evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. Leader of a rebel faction in Darfur rejects the comprehensive peace agreement.
It is the same agreement of since Bashir became in power till today. It is 47 agreements, none of them implement because it's not addressing the root cause of the problem.
And armed men killed two people in a road ambush in Yei County.
The family vehicle was actually traveling from Yei to Mbashi market. When reaching Senjal City Olo Tire, the vehicle fell to an ambush, killing two civilians.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of a Darfur-based rebel group, the Sudan Liberation Movement, has dismissed the comprehensive peace agreement signed by the Sudanese transitional government and a coalition of rebel groups on Monday. Abdul Wahid An-Nur says the agreement does not address the root causes of conflicts in Sudan. The rebel leader says he is fighting for a secular state where citizens are equal, regardless of their religion and ethnic affiliations. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Nur told VOA from Paris, France, the agreement reached by Sudan's transitional government and the Sudan Revolutionary Front will not achieve peace in Sudan.
The business as usual. It is the same Abuja agreement. It's the same agreement of the two regions. It's the same agreement of Doha. It's the same agreement of since Bashir became in power till today. It is 47 agreements, none of them implement because it's not addressing the root cause of the problem.
Nur says Sudan's conflicts resulted from the monopoly of power by certain elites in Khartoum and the marginalization of peoples from other areas based on their ethnicity and religion. He says any genuine peace must establish a secular state in Sudan where all citizens are created equal.
For us, the root cause is the equal citizenship right in the country. Second, to address why people became rebels. Because there is no equal citizenship right, there is no equal distribution in wealth, there is no equal development in the country, there is no equal between black and Arab and Muslim and Christian.
Nur says even though his group rejects the deal signed in Juba, unilateral ceasefires the SLM and the Sudan government have signed allow him to return to the country to work for peace inside Sudan. The South Kordofan and Blue Nile-based Sudan People's Liberation Movement and Army North, or SPLM-A North, also refused to sign the agreement made in Juba. Its spokesperson, Kuku Jagdol, tells South Sudan in Focus his group wants to see a deal that addresses national issues which affect the whole of Sudan.
Our agenda is clear that we told the government we have to discuss the root causes of the problems of Sudan, not the two areas. Because since the beginning, SPLA never admitted that it was negotiating on behalf of two areas. So we are talking about the problems of all the country.
The SPLM North, led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu, started peace talks with Sudan's transitional government, but later on refused to negotiate with the government's chief negotiator, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, often referred to as Hemeti. His group says Dagalo committed crimes against civilians in several parts of Sudan for years under the rule of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. Human Rights Watch has also accused Dagalo, who serves as deputy chairman of Sudan's Sovereign Council, of human rights abuses in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. Jagdol says, once the government replaces the head of its negotiating team, his group is ready to continue negotiating based on a declaration of principles the two parties agreed to before the peace talks began.
The relationship between the state and religion, that includes secularism, separation of religion from the state, identity issues, land issues, system of governance, establishing a unified national army, These are part of our part of the points on the Declaration of Principles.
The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, often called the Troika, released a statement Monday welcoming the deal and urging the SPLA North Abdulaziz Al-Hilu and the Sudan Liberation Movement Abdul Wahid Nur factions to build on the agreement and to engage in serious negotiations with the government of Sudan to achieve comprehensive peace. The spokesperson of the UN Secretary General, Stephane Dujarric, also released a statement this week that the Secretary General calls on the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, Abdulaziz Al-Hilu, and the Sudan Liberation Movement, Abdul Wahid Nur, to join the peace process. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Sudan's former Minister of State for Labor, Stephen Arnold, says Sudan's comprehensive peace agreement was reached behind closed doors, and many other political forces in Sudan were kept in dark. Arnold says the onus is on the parties that signed the agreement to implement it in a transparent manner to overcome any potential roadblocks on the road to peace in Sudan.
There was a very big mandate that came for the conflict in Sudan. Sudan has two tracks at the time. Mbeki was also having a stake in that, although the venue was Doha. And for the two areas, it was Addis Ababa, and it has a very clear mandate and the UN Security Council Resolution 2046. In which Mbeki has his mandate and has his powers and whatever. This peace talk is not because of the uprising.
In the absence of any regional backing of this agreement, what are the potential roadblocks on the road to peace in Sudan?
The biggest risk with this kind of what I am now calling the regional peace complexes, everybody will stand aside and be watching on defense. And of course, nobody is going to say no, they don't like it. Of course, nobody will go against peace. But again, you know, this kind of peace processes will, I don't want to say they lack the legitimacy, because, you know, the legitimacy is not only from regional and international bodies, but in a way, they may be lacking that kind of legitimacy. And they will also lack that kind of backing that can actually break through stalemates and whatever. As we are now seeing with South Sudan, nobody is pushing very hard, because at the end of the day, you know, the agreement that they reached was behind closed doors. This is another very important thing that we are seeing in this kind of processes. It's not accessible to many. You know, it lacks some kind of transparency. And so no many people will be able to put their hands into something that they don't know much. If the parties are honest and genuine and they are able to take their responsibilities, then definitely they will be able to have some breakthrough without the need of any outside support.
Yeah. You are a student of conflict. Allow me to take you back to class. Is this comprehensive agreement aimed at resolution or conflict transformation?
That's a resolution, my brother. And it's basically looking, you know, at the, not the core of issues, but looking at the peripheries of issues. You know, like now, even as we talk, I don't want to talk about the one of South Sudan. There are so many people who wrote about it. Talking even about what we call the mutual vulnerability. You know, that one was lacking in.
Can you explain what you mean by mutual vulnerability?
No, it's about vulnerability. You feel vulnerable, and both of you, when you feel vulnerable, then you are actually ready to compromise. But if you know there is no mutual vulnerability, only one is vulnerable, so that person will become desperate, and you know, he has to take whatever that comes from the other side. So it will not be a transformative peace, as we can say, but it will just be a peace of restoring the peace. And restoring the peace, it means, you know, just agreeing on what is preferable to the elites, what is preferable to those who are in power, who could see that, you know, the violence has disrupted the order, and they just need to restore it by, you know, cosmetic kind of accommodation here and there. And this is what's happening, that people are very much concerned about, you know, power sharing, wealth sharing, but little is mentioned in terms of, you know, transitional justice. Although it's in the current peace agreement for Sudan and South Sudan, you see in South Sudan, I remember it is chapter 5, the transitional justice with the components of hybrid courts and whatever. And you can understand from how things are that, you know, nobody is serious about pushing this agenda. And the same applies with the Sudan now, with these protocols, the 8 protocols that they have initialed. Of course, it has everything. But again, it doesn't mean that everything that is agreed is agreed. So they have agreed on this, but we don't know whether they will be able to take issue of transitional justice forward. Yeah. And this is where peace will just be a resolution of, you know, cessation of hostility, I can say, if you need to put it. You know, people will not fight as before. The hostility is put on a halt, but there is no transformation. And that's why it explains how within 6 years, Sudan has 13 peace processes. And you ask yourself, what happened to these 12?
That's Stephen Arno, Sudan's former Minister of State for Labor. Arno is a PhD student of Peace Studies and International Relations at the United States International University in Africa, based in Nairobi. He spoke with me via a messaging app on Sunday from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In the last part of this interview, Arno talks about accountability for the people of Darfur, Nuba Mountains, Southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. The UN Refugee Agency reports an estimated 125,000 refugees and internally displaced persons have been devastated by heavy flooding in Sudan. It says many who were already living on a knife's edge because of conflicts and loss of livelihood due to COVID-19 are now struggling to meet their most basic needs. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
An estimated 125,000 refugees and internally displaced people are affected by Sudan's worst flooding in a century. The UN Refugee Agency says the situation is particularly bad in the regions of East Sudan, White Nile, Darfur, and Khartoum. The agency says shelters have been washed away in the torrential rains, infrastructure has been destroyed, and latrines have collapsed, heightening the risk of disease. Officials say roads have become too muddy for traffic to pass through, making it impossible to deliver emergency aid to many in desperate need. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantou says the refugees and displaced people are in dire need of shelter and other relief. She says some have lost all their possessions and face the prospect of starting over.
Hygiene and sanitary levels have plummeted due to flooded latrines and contaminated water supplies, preventing people from exercising necessary COVID prevention measures such as regular hand washing. Some health facilities have been damaged, hampering their ability to treat patients should the transmission of COVID or other viruses or diseases increase.
Mantou notes many affected by the flooding have previously been displaced by conflict and have been unable to earn a living because of COVID-19 restrictions. She says they are living on a knife's edge and struggling to meet their most basic needs. COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. The World Health Organization says Sudan has more than 13,000 coronavirus infections, including 833 deaths. The UNHCR and other aid agencies are working with the Sudanese government to provide emergency aid wherever possible to refugees, other displaced people, and host communities throughout the country. Officials say the devastation caused by this historic flooding will be long-lasting, and people will require support for some time. The UNHCR says it is short of cash and is appealing to international donors for support. The agency notes it has received just 38% of the $275 million it needs for its humanitarian operation until the end of the year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, who is behind road ambushes in Yei County? Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life? My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related, I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Two people were killed and five others injured when armed men ambushed a vehicle in Yei on Tuesday. Yei Police Commissioner says a Toyota Land Cruiser carrying traders from Ombachi Market was attacked by armed men at Sanjasiri, 3 miles from Yei Town. Aid agencies in Yei County are expressing concerns about what they call frequent attacks on humanitarian convoys in recent weeks. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Yei Police Commissioner Major General Lujang Kamba says the Toyota Land Cruiser was carrying traders to a market in Ombasi Boma when it was ambushed 3 miles from Yei Town.
A family vehicle was actually traveling from Yei to Ombasi Market when reaching Sanjasiri Olotaya. The vehicle fell to an ambush, killing 2 civilians and 5 wounded. The same thing actually happened a week ago. One of the military vehicles fell to an ambush in 40 miles. And 2 days back also, 2 vehicles carrying food items to IDF, to Lanya, and they actually burned 1 vehicle to acid.
The injured are being treated at the Yei Civil Hospital. Kamba says all of the victims in the attacks have been civilians and suspects the latest attack was masterminded by the National Salvation Front, or NAS rebels. NAS spokesperson Suba Samuel told South Sudan in Focus he was busy and will not comment on the attack until tomorrow. Stella Kani, one of the survivors of Tuesday's attack, says their driver saw that the assailants were well armed, so he pushed on.
They did not stop our vehicle, but our driver drove towards them at high speed. If he did not do that, we would have all died in the vehicle.
Kani says she had to undergo surgery on her toes and arm from the injuries she sustained in the attack. Jacqueline Jendia, another survivor whose legs were wounded, says the attacker stole their money and phones before setting the vehicle on fire.
They fired at us to stop the vehicle. Some people crawled into the bush, but others who were shot could not go anywhere. They approached and shot 2 people dead, and before they burned the vehicle, one woman who was shot in the legs just fell down because she broke both legs. They robbed our phones, money, and the goods of businessmen.
Jendia says government forces rushed them to Yei Civil Hospital for treatment. Kamba says Yei police are worried about the increase in ambushes on civilians in recent days.
So this are actually civilians, they are killing cold blood and actually going for a market, going to taking their things as usual and going to possess some maybe commodities from Mbasi market.
Julius Taban, Assistant Commissioner for Refugee Affairs in Yei, says the attacks on humanitarians and civilians makes it difficult to deliver humanitarian support to refugees and IDPs in Lasso and Morobo.
They used to move to Lasso to the refugees camp to support the refugees and also support the host community, I mean the returnees and those who were displaced and they have come back, and they used to move there on daily basis based on the need. But of reason, of course, when this ambush happened, especially yesterday and also the other week, then it now gave a lot of questions on the humanitarian workers, how they are going to move now because of the atrocities on the way.
The attacks on civilians follows the killing of 6 bodyguards of South Sudan Vice President James Wanniga in the Lobonok area on August 19th. The National Salvation Front publicly claimed responsibility for the attack. The United Nations mission in South Sudan said in a statement today it is establishing a temporary peacekeeping base in Lobonok to help deter further attacks on civilians and humanitarian convoys. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
The South Sudan government is reinstating 15 judges President Salva Kiir fired in 2017 after the judges protested against poor working conditions and demanded the sacking of Chief Justice Chan Rek Madud. The East African Court of Justice ruled against Mr. Kiir's decision in July, describing it as unconstitutional and ordered for the immediate reinstatement of the fired judiciary employees. The Ministry of Justice in South Sudan says the fired judges should apply to be reinstated in their former positions. One of the fired judges who petitioned the East African Court of Justice says the ruling of the East African Court of Justice is final. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
In late July, the East African Court of Justice ruled that the judge's firing was unconstitutional and broke South Sudan's laws. After the ruling, fired Justice Maleng Matiang Malek said the verdict means he and the other 13 dismissed judges should be reinstated immediately. South Sudan's Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister Justice Ruben Madol Arol issued a press release yesterday stating that the dismissed justices and judges may apply to the Judiciary and Judicial Service Commission for reinstatement into their previous positions. Justice Malek, who petitioned the East African Court of Justice, says the South Sudan government has no right to set preconditions for the fired judges to resume their places on the bench.
They should just be reinstated. You should just take the list of the 14 and you reinstate them to the same position that they were on the 12th of July 2017. And then you pay them for the last 3 years. It's very simple as that. But now they are implicating who go and fly, and what about those judges who are very far away?
Kiir fired 14 justices and judges in 2017 through a presidential decree following the judges' strike demanding improved working conditions. The judges pleaded their case before the East African Court of Justice, which ruled in their favor and called for the judges' immediate reinstatement. Justice Malek says politics should never play a role in administering the rule of law in South Sudan. At this point, Malek says he is not sure whether he will return to the bench.
That would be a personal decision, because am I ready now to be a judge again? Have I become a politician rather than a judge? That is a question mark. Will the current Chief Justice of the Judicial South Sudan be ready to work with me as his mayor judge? That is a question mark. If there is really rule of law being administered in the judiciary of South Sudan, it is a question mark. There are a lot of things. So the whole thing is, yes, this is the court decision and it should be implemented. It should be implemented. I should be reinstated. And thereafter, to go or not to go, that would be a total different decision.
Justice Malek says the government must pay all 14 dismissed judges their salary in arrears for the past 3 years under the ruling of the East African Court of Justice. According to Malek, a South Sudan judge was paid about 8,000 South Sudanese pounds per month in 2016, which was equivalent to about $1,000 at the time. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Bambe Makaimot by Simon Kero.
Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Zaman motoro zede mate turu dumara Zaman matara zede mate turu dumara Bambe makaimo moya helo asaki Bambe makaimo moya helo asaki Washini dunga mayan me pare Washini dunga mayan me pare Aparo emejiro jini kusende na kwalio Aspire karanga juba na wawo wala Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Sikiri adabu sede marana madairu Sikiri adabu sede marana madairu Zaman barat zede marana madairu Ya bai guri chugwaje Ya bai guri chugwaje Washini dunga mayan me pare Washini dunga mayan me pare ndeku Kandara kamsa ginia kamu nifunga rufare Kandara shara ginia kamu nifunga rufare Bambe makaimo moya helo asaki Bambe makaimo moya helo asaki Ya bai guri chugwaje Shikiria dabu zede marana madairu Shikiria dabu zede marana madairu Ya bai guri chugwaje Zaman motoro zede mate turu dumara Zaman motoro zede mate
We've been listening to Simon Cairo with the song Bambe Makaimot. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing this program into your phones, homes, and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kamin manyingo karashi to kataranga baigu.